John is just thrilled to see you all, as am I.
Thank you for not rioting.
Well, we're going to begin our lecture now, because it will last about an hour and a half, and then we'll open the floor up for questions. Well, sit back and enjoy the ride. John Morgan.
Thank you.
And we'll dim the lights here.
Yep.
Did I get the focus right on that?
Yep.
Okay.
Great. Chris is going to be driving tonight, as she normally does. First of all, how about a round of applause for Chris Woods? She's been so kind to me, allowing me to come here and speak at Veterans over the last 3 years. And this lecture, my entire catalog of lectures, and you can log on to my website, ushistory.me or johnhorgan.com, and I offer a couple dozen lectures, but this is by far the most popular. And we wanted to do this for the summer people, because the summer people are just important to the vitality of Marshfield as the year-round residents. They've been taxed as well, and they've been part of the fabric and culture for well over 100 years. So Chris said on July 21st, we'll do it, and we didn't expect to have 190 people outside.
90.
And she had to tell people it was not the Jonas Brothers. And so I'm glad to have you here in an intimate setting here tonight. It's the Great Brent Rock Fire, and I know you'll maybe take a the down arrow, Chris. There we go. Some people call it the Great Ocean Bluff Fire.
It is.
Because it was in Ocean Bluff and Fieldston. It was not technically in Brent Rock. And we'll talk about that in a moment. So who am I? My wife said when she married me, she wasn't... she didn't know that three of my other personalities were waiting in the car for me. I'm a historical fire researcher. I look at great fires. Some of my keynote lectures are Great Fires of the American Revolution. I maintain that had the colonists not come down out of the hills on April 19, 1775, when somebody said, are you going to let them burn our town down? That they would have stayed in the hills, let the British go through, because they had hidden all the cannons, all of their weaponry. And then they would have thumbed their noses at them and let them go. But because they saw the smoke ball coming up, they charged the British at Old North Bridge. Great American fires of the 19th century. A lot of fires have reshaped this country, where you have an old burned out area that becomes a new vitalized area where our different ethnic groups move out, different ethnic groups move in. And I'm also a historical astronomy researcher. My friend George is here from the South Shore Astronomy Society. I love historical astronomy. I've been studying sunspots. And one of the lectures that I'm pulling together, and hopefully we'll have in 2010 here, is The Year Without a Summer, which is year 18 and 16, where it snowed in Boston on June 7th. You had frosts in July. And it was due in part to three things, the location of the Earth in relation to the sun in our solar system, the lack of sunspots. This was the middle of what was known as the Little Ice Age. And finally, volcanoes were going up, namely Tambora in Indonesia in 1815. Historical weather researcher. I've been studying historical weather accounts since the Pilgrims landed here in 1620, and I cut it off right about the Great Hurricane in 1938, which is also a popular lecture which we've done here before. And then other disasters. I'm really into economic depressions, recessions, booms, bust manias, and panics. That's my latest one. Looking at all these trends that we've been through financially over the last 250 years. And with every trough comes a nadir, and we're going to rock it out of this recession. Keep saying it's about to end, and it'll end eventually. Yeah. That may be in 10 years, it may be in 2 years. And I'm called an old New England folklorist. And the reason is I've been called other things that I can't mention publicly. But a folklorist means that I don't have a prefix or a suffix before or after my name, and I don't have a mortgage-sized student loan following me around for the rest of my life. I've been called a pocket historian, a non-academic storyteller, a rogue nostalgic, infotainer born from Google Books and PowerPoint. And I like to bring what's known as the new popular public history, which is bringing a contemporary and invigorating view to American history with a mission of returning baby boomers to their youth through historical presentations. And I will be driving the narrative tonight off the slide, so not to worry, they'll be able to hear me in Duxbury with my voice. And if I shadow you as I wander about, I'll try not to eclipse you. I have a fascination with early 20th century aviation. I also research legends, paranormal phenomena, and unexplained mysteries. I think I'm coming down here in late October to talk about Bay State Phantoms or what?
On a Wednesday night.
On a Wednesday night, just before Halloween.
Wednesday before Halloween.
So if I don't creep you out tonight, I guarantee I will on that day. I belong to three historical societies, Dover, Waltham, Watertown, and I'm a proud member of the Lincoln Minutemen. My friend George is also a member of that. We march around in colonial gear. And I've been blessed to be in the greatest professional sports bastion of America. I'm a professional sports announcer with the Boston Bruins alumni, entering my 17th season. And I'm the New England Patriots Alumni Club basketball announcer. I've been that for 16 years. So if I break out into a sports announcer voice, I apologize in advance. Also, I want to let you know that we have the New England History Festival coming to Watertown, historyfestival.org. It's Saturday, November 14th. Meant to fix that graphic. That was last year. Saturday, November 14th. We've got a John F. Kennedy impersonator doing the Missiles of October. We've got Abigail Adams. We've got the Naked Quaker about colonial life. And also, we're going to have Harriet Tubman, amongst other acts. And then my brother's doing a great story on the Lady in Black. Boston Harbor Islands. He's going to shoot down that myth. Cell phones off, please. And usually when I say that, mine goes off. It's off, okay? I'm not a seismologist, geophysicist, etc., etc. I don't blog, nor do I read blogs, but I might one day. Questions at the end of the lecture, please, although you can jump out with comments and oohs and ahs. And my axiom is there's always someone in attendance who knows more about the subject than I do, and, of course, someone who thinks that they know more about the subject than I do. And that may be the case tonight because some of you actually lived through it, or your second generation of families that lived through the Brent Rock fire. Fire exits out here, straight out, get away from the building. Out here to the left, get away from the building. And then I have various email addresses, johnhorgan@hotmail.com. Let's look at the great fires of New England, 1623 Plymouth. That's the fire where they banned smoking outdoors because the embers were going into the thatched roof. So my, how times have changed. The great 1776 fire of Boston, the first great fire of Boston. Paul Revere's family house was burned down. 1711, 1760, where Faneuil Hall was burned down. The bombardment of Falmouth by Admiral Mowat bombed modern-day Portland, Maine. And then 100 years later, or so in Portland, Maine on July 4th, the city went up in smoke. The 1872, the greatest fire in Boston's history, known as Damrell's Fire. Most of the Back Bay was built on landfill and debris that was burnt in that fire. And people talk about earthquakes, and I think 1638 we had an earthquake, 1744, 1755 were the last major earthquakes in Boston. 1894, Roxbury, that's the one that burned down the South End grounds and forced the baseball team, the Boston Bean Eaters, to go play in the Congress Street grounds, which had a 210-foot right field fence. This guy's a lefty. I could have put a wiffle ball out there. And then they went to the new South End grounds. Nantasket Beach, the great Nantasket Beach fire. 1942, the tragic Coconut Grove fire that 300 people lost their lives. The great fire of Chelsea, and of course, the Station Club fire in Rhode Island, 2003. Just looking at some of the losses. And these are $1941 dollars, but 1822 Haverhill, Boston in 1889, Lynn in 1889, Boston again on Kingston Street, Chelsea, 1911 Bangor, Maine, 1914 Salem, $14 million. And this fire you'll see is the greatest fire in New England since the Salem fire. Fall River in 16 and 28, and then Nashua, New Hampshire. I'm just going to pull a couple of great American fires out here to put this into context. This is in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. December 26, 1802, at 4 a.m., 132 buildings were lost. It started on the site of the banking block in what is today Market Square and obliterated the city along Daniel Street. In the central parade, only the North Church and the Old State House were left standing. Then, on Wednesday morning, December 24, 1806, again a Christmas fire, the second great downtown fire moved in from the Bow Street area, up Market Street, back towards the barely recovered square, and St. John's Church and 13 buildings were destroyed. The reason why I bring this up is because on Wednesday, December 22, 1813, the largest great fire occurred in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, when a terrible fire burned nearly the entire central business district, which was 300 buildings, stopping only when it reached the Piscataquag River. A promising young New Hampshire attorney named Daniel Webster lost his Portsmouth house to the fire of 1813, and he decided to relocate to nearby Massachusetts. Anybody want to give a guess where he came? Marshfield. 1845, another major fire occurred. Webster said, Marshfield is half marsh and half heaven. Another fire I've studied, the Great Nantucket Fire. First major fire in Nantucket was 1838. This one, basically, barrels of whale oil exploded and burning oil flowed into the water. One man described it as a sea of fire. 7 hours later, 250 buildings were destroyed. It ended Nantucket's reign as the whaling capital of the world. And this is when you took fire ashes out of your fireplace, you put them into a wooden box, and you put them outside your house, and the man with the wooden wagon would take the wooden box full of hot ashes and put them into the wooden wagon. He'd take it to a building and store it in a wooden bin. They figured out that that doesn't work anymore. And this one is great because the fire companies, the two competing fire companies on Nantucket, had a fist fight on Main Street to see who would get the honor of putting out the fire while the whole town burned behind them. Another one, Martha's Vineyard, August 11, 1883. It burned down all of Main Street from Nye's Paint Shop to the Mansion House and beyond, both sides of the street. Flying burning shingles also started two isolated fires on William Street. And then as I was mentioning about the Great Roxbury Fire, it started in the South End grounds. John McGraw with the Baltimore Orioles had spiked the third baseman McDermott on the Bean Eaters, and as they were about to go at it, they said, look, there's a fire in the right field grandstand. Apparently some kids were playing with matches underneath the grandstand, burned it down. Actually, it was Tommy Tucker who had fought McGraw. And they built another South End grounds called South End Grounds 3 to occupy the site. It served again as the home of the Boston Braves. A lot of lore there. It's no longer standing. I believe this is South End Grounds in Roxbury. There are some buildings built on it now, but there is a commemorative plaque. So, is it the Great Ocean Bluff Fire, the Great Shore Fire, the Great Brent Rock Fire? And the answer is yes. Let's look at the hamlets of Marshfield, and I always get to learn new hamlets whenever I put the slide up. But in 1640, Marshfield was founded by Edward Winslow, and they voted to incorporate townships. The villages and district names were Brant Rock, Center Marshfield, Ferry Hill, Fairbanks Park, Hewitt's Point, Green Harbor, Fieldston, other ones. These are other names that come about. Everson's Island, Major's Island, Marshfield Hills, East Marshfield, North Marshfield, Humrock, Ocean Bluff, Ocean's Bluff, Wrexham Terrace, Wrexham with a W, Holly Hill, Seaview, Marsh Vegas, Standish, which is the Route 139 area. Holy City was a name given to the cluster of tiny cottages around St. Anne's-by-the-Sea Church, circa the late 1910s and into the early 1920s. That's key in the story tonight. A Sunrise Beach was a name given to the beach area in Ocean Bluff, also a major player tonight. Abington Village, an area in Fieldston adjacent to Sunrise Beach. Greenbush was the name given to the late 19th century area west of Brant Rock on the opposite side of the river. And then Bluefish Bay, Blackman's Point. And I've seen Blackman's spelled with an M-A-N at the end or an M-O-N, and I can't figure out what's right. I'm going to go with the M, Blackman's Point.
A-M-A-N.
It's A?
I think so.
Okay. Was tagged in the middle of the 19th century. Careswell, where I grew up, was the name given to the area near Flaherty's Pond in the New Assumption Church. It was the area owned by Fletcher Webster, Daniel Webster's son. In fact, we grew up in Fletcher Webster's barn. So if I do moo or make a pig noise, that's I mark it back to my childhood. Duxfield is a name given to houses on the Duxbury-Marshfield line on the way to Duxbury Beach. Green Harbor Village, Cedar Crest, the campground off of Careswell Street. We used to hear them reveille and taps in the morning. The kids, they put the kids in the truck and drive them to Duxbury Beach. Yep. Brooks Beach, named the late 1960s, Blackmount, Fieldston Lodge, and we think that's where the fire began, and then the Everson Village District. Any other names that you can think of hamlets? Okay. If you think of one, let me know. That's the area we're talking about tonight. So if you can see on the map, it's clearly Ocean Bluff and not Brant Rock. Brant Rock Village, this is off of a marker, named for Brant Geese. Two islands early called Governor's Island, later Hewitt's Island and Branches Island, together known as Spectacle Islands. The early landowners, John Bradford, Christopher Winter, John Hewitt, and John Branch. It's the site of resort hotels, Pioneer Cottage, 1861, the Churchill in 1866, the Brant Rock House, 1874, the Ocean House, 1875, the Fairview, 1877, and the Peace Haven. It's also very famous because of Fessenden Tower. The first radio broadcast was conducted by Canadian Reginald Fessenden, who lived until 1931, from his Brant Rock, Massachusetts radio station to ships at sea on December 24, 1906, Christmas Eve, with the assistance of his wife Helen, his secretary Miss Bent, and his associate Mr. Stein. At 9 o'clock in the evening, Fessenden began his broadcast playing Handel's Largo, presumably from his opera Xerxes, on an Edifone phonograph. He then played O Holy Night on his violin, singing the last verse as he played. Finally, he read a selection from the Book of Luke, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth, peace to men of goodwill. So what's the area of devastation? This comes from one of the Boston newspapers of April 1941. We're talking about this entire area here. The Greenbush Dike in 1872, a dike was built, the road over which connected Brant Rock with Green Harbor, and unfortunately we had a tragic accident there last week. The project was the subject of heated debate among farmers who were eager to drain and work the land, and fishermen who claimed the dike would interrupt the river's tidal flow and silt in the mouth of the Green Harbor. Despite the controversy, the dike was built, opening thousands of acres of lowland on which hundreds of families live today. Let's take a walk through old Brant Rock and old Ocean Bluff. There are some beachgoers here near Brant Rock, 1905. You can see Brant Rock there. This is before they had the connecting jetty. Ocean Bluff, 1914. Life was good. Life was simple. No bailouts. The six great inns of Brant Rock. As we mentioned, the Fairview, built in 1874, burned down on March 17, 1998, rebuilt again in 2001. The Fairview Inn was originally established as a boarding house for the elite. It became the exclusive and elegant Como Club in the 20s and 30s, offering dining and strolling violinists, followed by gambling at the rear of the building. The club was named after the ship Como, which ran illegal rum, supposedly, I have to put quotation fingers, which supposedly ran illegal rum along the coast during Prohibition. It is rumored that a tunnel running from beneath the original structure to the ocean was used to deliver the contraband liquor. The Brant Rock House was built in 1874, torn down in 1938. The Ocean House, which is where the Brant Rock Theater occupied, was built in 1875 and lost a fire on September 5th, 1973. The Pioneer Cottage was built in 1861, then renamed the Atlantic House in 1879, and lost in the Ocean Bluff Great Fire of 1941. The Churchill was built in 1866, burned down in 1909, and the Peace Haven, built in 1903, razed in the 1940s. Here's a Coast Guard station. Can we go back to that, Chris? Does everybody know where that is now, where they have the... I love that stop. They have at the Brant Rock Supermarket. You're coming in on, Dyke Road? As you come to the T there, right is downtown Brant Rock. Left, you go up along the seawall. And there, that's where the Coast Guard's. Yes, exactly. The Peace Haven. What a beautiful building. Windships. That's a player in today's show. On rainy days. My dad would take the four boys up there and my sisters up there, and we'd get a model or a toy from Winship's. The Fairview, the original Fairview. The Rexicana. Oh, yeah. One of the guys said when the Rex burned down, I think it was 1978, said a lot of memories went up in smoke, but it happened well past its prime. So a lot of good memories there. The Churchill, 1866. Early photographs. Look at the dress there. Again, another photograph of the Churchill. Magnificent structure. Wright and Starrett. We're going to be talking about that tonight. The Starrett store and the post office. The Ocean Bluff House. St. Anne's by the Sea. The Ocean House. This is where the Brant Rock Theater, right? Turned into the Brant Rock Theater. Bowling Alley below. Yep. Peterson's. Wright and Starrett's again. The Ocean Bluff Casino. Old Ocean Bluff. Cottages along the Ocean Bluff. Look how close they are to the water. And again, looking back towards Brant Rock, towards the tower. Anybody remember the Fieldston Restaurant? I know you're all too young. None of you were around in 1941, but I'll ask anyways. anybody remember the Fieldston restaurant?
On 139?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Here you could get a pretty good ice cream cone there. Again, Ocean Bluff Hotel. Ocean Street and Beach, Ocean Bluff, Brant Rock, Mass., turn of the century. From the Army Tower, circa 1943, looking at Brant Rock. And then some historical fires in Marshfield. 1773, in fact, December 19, 1773, 3 days after the Boston Tea Party, on Tea Rock Hill, the British stores of tea were burned along Ocean Street and Moraine Street. There's Tea Rock Hill. Does everybody know where that street is? Well, another section of Marshfield I forgot to mention was Walgreens. That's a brand new section. It's just before Walgreens. I'm going to come out. I think we need a pharmacy. What do you think? I'm going to look into that, getting a Target down here. Yeah, I think there's a niche there. A pharmacy? You want a pharmacy? You want to get your hair done? I can tell you. To go to Marshfield. 1919, the Sears building at the end of Landing Road burned down. 1934, convalescent and chronic home changed from the old South Shore Hospital in 1926. It burned in March of 1934. The Winslow House had a fire in 1940. Of course, the Great Brant Rock Fire. 1958, Cohee Roller Skating Rink, which preceded Family Skateland. Eli's Linen Store in Brant Rock, 1960. 1964, Webster Hotel on the Landing Road in Careswell Street, November 16th of that year. There was a house fire in 1970 on the island off Dyke Road. Estee's Candy Kitchen, summer 1972, gone. Yeah. Best popcorn. Yep. 1973, Brant Rock Theater burned on September 5th. The Marshfield Country Club went up in 1978. The Rex burned down on September 6th, 1978. Copeland and Sons Lumberyard had two conflagrations, 1979 and 1989. Assumption Church burned in 1981, now moved to the corner of Canal and Careswell. And the Adelaide Phillips House burned July 9th. It was lightning strikes there throughout the years. A couple hundred years they had that. Okay, Chris, here's where we're going to take the time machine. If you could do one down arrow, please. And before we get on board, I just want to tell you that, first of all, we need to take your shoes off, go through the metal detector. You're only allowed 3 ounces of liquid to bring on the time machine. And, oh, I've just found out that our flight has been delayed by 4 hours. One more, Chris. H.G. Wells is going to loan us that. Okay, one more. All right, we're getting this fired up. All right. Let's wait for it. It's old, so remember, try it one more time. There we go. Okay. One more key. There we go. We're off. My wife, her description of this was goofy. Aristotle. I know, I have dopamine, don't worry. The Crusades. Columbus. I had somebody in Waltham tell me that Columbus dropped off the pilgrims at Plymouth Rock. And the teacher didn't say anything. I said, you're absolutely correct.
Jay Leno gets funny answers.
Oh, yeah. Jay just shows how dumb
the
Alamo, yeah. We're almost there. Civil War, World War One. Okay, one more key, Chris. There we go. All right. What's 1941 known for aside from Pearl Harbor? One heck of a baseball season. The Yankee Clipper, Joe DiMaggio, 56 straight games. The Kid, a splendid splinter. There goes the greatest hitter that ever lived. You could talk about your Bonds or Albert Pujols, but this guy was more John Wayne than John Wayne was. Ted Williams, fought in two wars, do the math, 800 home runs. Okay, that's the greatest hitter that ever lived. And you can have all your steroids, and that's a baseball player. So you go out to your porch that morning of April 21st, 1941, and you get your Time magazine, and you've got this Nimovic of Yugoslavia, who was compliant with the Germans, on the cover. General Dusan. And what else? What do you get in your morning newspaper that day? Well, the Nazis are within 30 miles of Athens, 21 British troop transports with thousands drowned or lost. A fire bomber is on the loose in Mattapan. It was known as a Red Scare. there's a bomb scare at Logan Airport. The Red Sox undefeated streak comes to an end. They're 5-1 at the hands of the Washington Senators. It's Steve Sondra. Joe Cronin's hitting 500. Ted Williams, 400. Don DiMaggio, God rest his soul. Ted Williams used to say that he owed Don DiMaggio half his salary because Don did half his job in the outfield, ran down all the fly balls. Williams, when Joe was on his hitting streak, the old Fenway Park scoreboard, Williams would talk to the telegraph operator and he'd yell out to Dommy, "Hey, Dommy, Joe got his hit today." And Don wouldn't take his eyes off the batter, would just nod and say thanks. The Boston Braves pulled a 3-4 after beating Philadelphia, and the weather says sunny, dry, and windy. There are major fires all across the Commonwealth. We'll look at those in a little while. And there's a huge one going on in Fort Dix, New Jersey. The newly formed National Guard is called out to help at Camp Edwards in Sandwich Woods and at Fort Devens. And the Germans firebomb Plymouth, England, right back at you 3 years later. So, I'm going to read these off to you. These are the major conflagrations of April 20th and April 21st, 1941. Here are the acting fire departments that had active. Acton, Ayer, Barnstable, Barry Plains, Belchertown, Billerica, Blackstone, Brimfield, Boxford, Burlington, Catawba, Cohasset, Concord, Draken, Fiskdale, Groveland, Harvard, Holliston, Hopedale, Hingham, Ipswich, Lancaster, Leominster, Lexington, Maynard, Medway, Mendon, Methuen, Millville, Milton, New Braintree, North Andover, North Bridgewater, North Uxbridge, Norwalk, Oakham, Pepperell, Randolph, Rutland, Sandwich, Shirley, Sutton, Swampscott, Topsfield, Upton, Westwood, Whitman, Winchendon, Wilmington, and there were 8 fires at Fort Devens. That's the active fire departments that day. Acting Governor Horace Cahill, Governor Saltonstall was in Washington at the time, said that one fire was being reported every 20 minutes. Over 250 fires were reported. All the state woods were closed. There were over 200 fires reported, ironically, on April 19th, 2008. So 57 years later, almost to the day, they had another bad fire day in Massachusetts. Quabbin Dam. Well, the trees that were felled by the 1938 hurricane were laying as matchsticks to fuel the fire there and other places. All pilots were called to spot and report fires from the air. And this, which leads to my flying boat slide later in the presentation, why I think there was a flying boat there. All hunting, trapping, fishing suspended, and check this out, all firearms dispensing prohibited. You could not take a firearm out of your house. What are the weather conditions? Well, 1941 is the driest year since 1888. 1888 was a very dry year, but also Boston suffered a great blizzard, the blizzard of 88 that year. In fact, it devastated New York City. And this April of 1941 was a very dry month with less than an inch of rain in the last 4 weeks. The morning of April 21st was very windy with gusts up to 40 miles per hour. So you say, "What? This wasn't the Brantrock fire. It was an Ocean Bluff." Boston Traveler, quote, called it the Ocean Bluffs fire. The Boston Record called it the Ocean Bluff fire. The Boston Herald, wrong again, the Brantrock fire. The Boston Post, the Great Shore fire. And the Marshfield Mariner, in 1973, did a commemorative flashback, and they called it the Great Brant Rock Fire. So technically, nothing burned in Brant Rock, only in Fieldston and Ocean Bluff. I just made this slide up 2 minutes ago, but I wanted to give you some crib notes where we're going. You're going to see 100-foot flames in a 30-mile-per-hour constant wind today, with 40-mile-per-hour gusts from the west. It begins on a Monday during school vacation, 1 mile away from homes. There are heroes and goats in this story. We're going to meet the heroes in just a little while. Let's talk about the goats. The advisory committee had decided on April 19th, 2 days earlier, to revoke a $300 appropriation to annually burn marsh grass to pre-burn and prevent fires. They saved $300 and it cost them $1.25 million. Voters had voted for this at a town meeting in March, but were denied in April. They said it wasn't necessary this year. Beach Colony residents knew that fire was coming and they feared it. 15% of all valuation was lost. Like I said, $300 saved to lose $1.2 million. That's 1941 dollars. It's the most expensive fire in the history of the South Shore up until 1941. It's the largest in New England since the Great Salem Fire of 1914. And it's knocked down at Samoset Street at 6 o'clock when the wind shifts. And it takes 17 blocks and 2 square miles with it. Oh, special thanks to Father William O'Connell. Father Bill is in the hospital right now getting some work done. But he's been such a stalwart with this presentation. I take it out of newspapers, and he tells me, no, this is right, that's wrong. And he's helped me immensely with this presentation. Get well, Father Bill. So, it began just before 2 p.m. at the corner of Ocean and Plymouth. Or did it? And that's what we're going to look at. Myth had always maintained that it started here. In fact, the newspapers of the day said it started at the corner of Ocean and Plymouth. Do you know where Courtney's restaurant is? Do you know where the gas station is where they pump a short gallon? Oops, there I go again. Anybody from Weights and Measures here? Please check out that gas station. Great low prices for smaller gallons. So, 3 different stories. Is it a cigarette? Is it mischievous arson because kids are on school vacation? Is it a broken glass bottle according to the Boston Post? I'll get to that in a minute. I did have a woman attending. If you're here tonight, I'm sorry if I forget your name. She said that she was in a car that day behind some teenage boys who were in a convertible and saw somebody flick a cigarette out the right-hand side of the car because they were heading towards the ocean. And her mother made a comment to the effect that that's going to start a fire. And then later when they got back to their house that day, they heard there was a major fire in Brent Rock. So did it start there? Now, what we're going to see is maybe it started back in here. We're going to see a photo that Father Bill gave me. So a grass fire started near Fieldston Lodge and swept into the tall horse grass in Dyke's Meadow. The gas station owner at Ocean Street and Plymouth Street, who called in the fire, claims that he saw a cigarette butt thrown out of a car window. Is that corroboration?
Yeah.
You got the gas station owner and a woman who was riding behind at the time. Talk about serendipity. The Boston Post claimed that the sun reflecting through broken glass ignited the fire. This had happened only once before in an episode of Lassie. Okay, now, ground zero. Given I gave you where we said it. This is where we thought it, right? Would you, right? So this is the corner of Ocean and Plymouth, right? The nexus here. And granted, with excavation and grading, the contour of the road has changed. But look at, there you go from a plane. Ground zero. And we know the wind's blowing from the west this way. Although at that time, as you can see, the wind is driving the fire this way. The fire is going to follow the smoke. I will point out that people did see, is that a wisp of smoke here? Is this a fire here too? We were debating that too. So, right? So, some people now, and again, I was not around in 1941. Some people think this is what they're talking about, and it lines up with the Courtney's, right? The Ocean Street and Plymouth Street, right? And blows right through here, right? And they were saying that, oh, this died out. This was a backfire, which doesn't make sense. But Father Bill, who lived through the event, and some of the others insist that this is ground zero, which puts it well off the road, doesn't it? Almost, I guess, where would Girard Farms be? Right about there, maybe?
Yeah.
So, do the math. So, this is the important photograph, and I'm not sure. Father Bill, when he gets out of the hospital, is going to take me where he thinks is ground zero. And you can see the dike there. So, and we'll go back to that later at the end. So the speed of the blaze left virtually no time to react to it. And people were stunned. This is a Ruth Public cover, Stairs at the Conflagration. And again, the quality of these photos, they're copied out of the newspapers. We have some really excellent quality photographs firsthand that Chris had made into JPEG. So I apologize in advance. You're going to see the contrast is going to be a little off. So getting out of the house was first and foremost. There was absolutely no time to gather belongings. And you're going to see that the police chief is driving up and down Ocean Street telling people there's a fire. They didn't know that. It moved so quickly. The resident said it went up just like that. And you can just look at the angst here. So you got this guy here carrying some sort of water can, portable water can to help fight the fire. It's a ferocious fire. You can see a stream of fire being put on here. And again, this is a different view now. So the plane that took this now is swinging around. So you can see where this is in my estimation, this is all burned out here, right? Mm-hmm. It burned right across, and here it is taking this entire section. And again, I believe that's Brant Rock right there. So there's a mad scramble. Before long, a street was being engulfed every 20 minutes, an entire street. And you can see this guy here, I think he's got some sort of suitcase. It looks like a, look at this poor woman here running. She had her chairs on the yard. I mean, can you imagine seeing that? And your the house that you spent all your money, your life, your family was there, and you see that? Again, they're exploding. A firestorm. The lights that had never been seen in these parts took off like an unleashed dog. Look at the house just exploding in flame. Total conflagration. So, Silas Wright, he's the fire chief and he's part owner of Wright and Starrett's. Charles Starrett is the postmaster, and we'll look at a photo later on, Charles. They owned a popular store in Marshfield at the time. And in this day and age, and I talked to you about the Nantucket firefighters fighting, there was a bit of a bravado and ego for fire departments. We don't need to call in for extra alarms. Looks bad in our department. Well, Silas Wright knew that it was in over his head. And he had the presence of mind and the humility to call for help instantaneously. And you're going to see, there's a truck that comes up out of Cape Cod like a Beverly Hillbillies truck with firefighters hanging off of it. Guys coming from 40 miles around to help out. Now, Old Engine 3, better known as the Old Girl, and Duxbury firefighters work at a conflagration in the Brant Rock section of Marshfield 1941. She was lost in the fire. She was replaced by the Marshfield Fire Department. And there's some controversy with this. So the Marshfield Fire Department paid for this. And this is Old Girl Engine 3. I'm going to show you a burned out skeleton frame of a fire truck later, which for years has been misidentified as Old Girl Engine 3, when in fact a gentleman from the Duxbury Fire Department pointed out and said it was Engine 1. Chief Robinson, our fire chief at Marshfield, said, "We want our money back then." So blown embers ignited adjacent houses. There were other heroes too. State Fire Marshal Stephen Garrity came roaring down here in his car to help out. Commissioner Eugene McSweeney did anything he could to help with the criminal investigation, because immediately they suspected that it was arson. Another hero, Police Chief William H. Pratt, raced up and down Ocean Street warning residents about the fire. They didn't even know there was a fire. This saved several lives, as very early on, most didn't even know that a fire was raging. So nobody died in this fire. Yes?
Excuse me, now, like, is the wind, it says it was up to
The wind is blowing from Embry, right, to Embry. You're talking Beechwood, Drodgewood, and there's not much to do with fire codes here and zoning laws, and you'll see that's changed later. And they're just jumping, bang, bang, every house is going up. You couldn't put down. I mean, I guess this is the closest we've ever come to what it's like to live in Southern California, or what's going on in Athens, outside of Athens, Greece right now. So firefighting was hampered by, well, dry weather, heavy wind, poor equipment, and poor water pressure. And so that hindered their firefighting efforts. Backfires were set by firefighters, and they backfired. The backdraft fueled the conflagration. Molten lead dripped from the wires in a lethal spray. Imagine watching everything that you own go up in flames, not in smoke, in flames. Everything, I mean everything, burned. Everything except one building. Does anyone want to get, before we get to the slide, what building didn't burn?
Fire station.
That's correct, the fire station. Neighbors helped neighbors. Now that's a foreign term that I just said that doesn't exist in the American lexicon here in the 21st century, but neighbors helped neighbors. John Shaw helps Mr. and Mrs. Samuel Capon of Ocean Bluffs. Firemen are trying to make a stand. They stood and fought along Ocean Street. They did whatever they could. There was a field where residents went to assess, stage, and regroup. Many hugs were exchanged when loved ones found loved ones. I was told the name of this field, and I forgot it. Anybody? It's an area that sat more towards Ocean Street and Plymouth Street.
Livingston?
A field?
Livingston's?
Livingston's?
The Livingston Farm.
That's it. Note to self.
Livingston's.
Quote, it felt like some British seaport firebomb by the Luftwaffe. And again, this is in the news. And that's why this gentleman said that, because literally the day before, the Nazis had firebombed the Brits. 17 blocks, 2 square miles, 600 structures, 446 houses, gone. Robert Bowles, Selectman Robert Bowles, a good guy. You don't hang the Appropriations Committee on him. He said, quote, we were licked in Holy City. Holy City was wiped out. And help me out here again. Holy City, small cottages built very close together. A woman at the lecture here in July said that, I remember that you could hand a beer to the guy next in the next house out the window. Everybody knew everybody else's business. It was, there were small cottages, no fire regulations, no zoning regulations. You were there to sleep and go to the beach. So there are houses on top of each other. And this is the area around St. Anne's Church. Fire station of on Massasoit Street was spared, known as Combo 1. There you go. And it's still, basic structure still standing, right? This is an irony at the height of the Big Marshfield fire. John Troy is crouching. He's the second from the left. Okay, this guy here is a member of the Rockland School Committee. And he's directing a hose line on the cottage of Miss Agnes Kelleher, a chairman of the town school committee. So he hears, she probably calls up, says to another school committee chairman in another town, says, my house is on fire. What does he do? He jumps in his car and comes down to fight the fire. And that's the Rockland firefighters. So the winds urged the blaze on, furiously burning. Only the whim of the wind, the whim of the wild wind, to dictate its fury. The flames in this Brent Rock cottage offer a typical example of the manner in which the fire spread from home to home in the area yesterday afternoon. So we're talking about, some people say 1:30, some say 2 on the dot. I think it's about 10 minutes or 2 is the starting point. The water pressure was terrible, despite the fact that the water tower held over 339,000 gallons of water. And we'll see that in a photo coming up here. And again, this, I believe, is Old Girl, Duxbury's. Marshfield police officer John Golly saw smoke when he was returning from a shopping trip from Plymouth with his wife. When he realized that it was his neighborhood, he parked the car and they raced inside, only having time to grab a change of clothes for themselves. They had no time to drive through the back fence. They had to drive through the back fence to escape. So in other words, they pulled into their driveway and the house caught on fire and they had to smash over a fence to get out of there alive. And then this is probably one of the most iconic images of the Brent Rock fire. As you can see, Mr. and Mrs. Charles Bennett, they lost 9 homes. But let's just look at the bewilderment on Mr. Bennett's face and the grief on Mrs. Charles Bennett. Mr. and Mrs. John Pratt, the newlyweds had just moved to Marshfield from Waltham only 3 days before, and they lost everything. Fire hoses melted and caught fire. Over 70 year-round families had to be evacuated and bivouacked. A Webster House put them up. Some stayed at Winslow House for the night. Helpless residents could only watch and pray. And they couldn't pray in a little while because St. Anne's went. The folklore tells of the only injury recorded aside from singed eyebrows was an ash in the eye, but 13 Plymouth firefighters were treated on the scene for smoke inhalation. Quote, the sound was like the low growl of a hungry lion. 30 cottages went up in the first 30 minutes, 300 in the next hour. The worst fire in New England since the Great Salem Fire of 1914, which took 2,000 structures. So they're taking coffee and donuts at Wright and Starrett's. Moments later, the store is ablaze. Structures burned and then buckled in minutes. It's amazing. Nobody died, and the only injuries were singed eyebrows, smoke inhalation, because of the integrity of the structures. And imagine the burning embers. Truly amazing. The coastline was ablaze, totally ablaze. Now, check this out, okay? So we got something going on. These are backfires, right? Got to be. Or is this, you know, if we look at our ground zero picture from before, like we have ground zero over here, but you have backfires being set here. Right through. The newly formed National Guard was called out. And they were very busy in their initial deployment, as I spoke to you about those other fires, 8 alone in Fort Devens. Here's what I want to ask if anybody was there. A Coast Guard flying boat circled overhead taking photos. Now, people that, namely Biff Henderson, who watched the fire, Father O'Connor, don't remember this big clipper. Now, this is something that would stand out. But obviously, all those photographs being taken during the fire would have to have come from an aircraft. And moreover, all the pilots aloft were looking for fires and were actually being paid by the state, which means they had a lot of aircraft in the air. But nobody ever recalls seeing this flying boat. And it's in the newspaper saying a flying boat circled overhead. So losses of entire streets, as I mentioned, happened in 20-minute intervals. The Brilliance, the family, she saved her husband's ashes, but her fire insurance had expired 2 days earlier. Two thoughtful, unknown schoolgirls from Newton helped evacuate Mrs. Publicover and her valuable possessions. I always ask it, any of those schoolgirls here tonight from Newton? Okay. Smoke was seen from Nantucket. Some images of desperation and devastation. You can just see the helplessness. And people moved out of the way, and they were very cooperative and gave the firemen leeway in order to take on the monster.
Excuse me. So the sky would have been full of smoke, so maybe they couldn't see the plane, right? They could hear it.
Yeah, that good point, but they could hear, you know.
Yeah.
Clippers were loud. Tell the guys on Wake Island that. My dad came down to Marshfield 6 o'clock that evening as the sun was setting. Actually, no, let's say 7 o'clock. And I guess at the corner where the New Assumption Church is now, at the corner of Carriageville and Canal, everybody with me where that is, where the new church is, they had blocked it off. And he said that the sky was a blood red sky, a glowing blood red sky. Losses were total. There was nearly nothing to salvage. A Winship store had just been fully restocked for the summer, and it was burned down. It was difficult to find your own foundation or cinder pile, your choice of terms, people walking down. And then for years I thought, well, not for years, but for a few years I thought that, I'm quoting here a song by Roger Daltrey, "After the fire still burns," but I thought this was the casino fireplace. No, it's my friend Father O'Connor's family fireplace. That's the O'Connor family place. Now, as you drive up Ocean Street, coming from Brant Rock Center, on the right before you hit the wall, no, right after the end of the wall, actually, you'll see a stone that it's Hewitt's Point, shipwrecks there. That's Father O'Connor's place. Residents said Hitler couldn't have done worse. It could have been a village decimated by the Germans in World War II. Look at that. And here's the water tower I was telling you about, 339,000 gallons. That's the edifice of St. Anne's. War in all its fury could spread no greater devastation over a resort than the leaping flames which leveled 500 cottages yesterday afternoon in the Fieldston Brant Rock section, leaving behind scenes of bleak ruins such as bare trees and tumbled chimneys shown here. The lead in the stained glass windows at St. Anne's turned molten and the windows exploded outward. St. Anne's by the sea, mass was held in the Fieldston Ballroom for 1941 and 1942, the wrecks. So, automobile tires melted onto the road. This is not Old Girl, which we thought for several years. A gentleman from the Duxbury Fire Department straightened me up. This is Duxbury Engine 1. It's a Model A Ford, and it was burned out completely. So this is not a photo of Duxbury Engine 3, Old Girl. Old Girl's been restored by a Westport collector in Westport, Mass. That should be a T there. But he painted Marshfield on it. So Marshfield paid for the replacement. And how ironic is that for Duxbury's replacement and the guy who restored it put Marshfield on it. Within an hour after the fire began, New England Telephone and Telegraph workers, with the help from Chief Pratt, had hung an emergency wire from the old schoolhouse converted to a police station. The Brockton Gas and Plymouth Electric Companies got out ahead of the fire, shutting off gas and electricity and collecting copper wire. Very valuable. Still is very valuable. It took less than 3 minutes for the casino to burn to the ground. Again, this fireplace belongs to the O'Connor family, not to the casino. And the Ocean Bluff House was raised in just 5 minutes. So 3 minutes for the casino, 5 minutes for the Ocean Bluff House. Combustible and dry. Police warned about exploding projectiles and missiles being launched from the casino. They're talking about exploding bottles of beer. The wrath of the conflagration. The fire recodified zoning laws. Cottages could no longer be built on top of one another or with cheap, dry beech wood. So you have Chief Silas Wright, who lost his home and his store, with Charles Starrett, and the inspector Byron Hall and postmaster Charles Starrett. So you have the inspector on the left and Charles Starrett on the right. The safe saved a lot of precious items belonging to the town of Marshfield. John A. Gaffey, a year-rounder, lost everything. Doesn't know what to do. So they had to count chimneys in order to determine how many houses were burned, and kids were given 50 cents for each one that they knocked down. This is from Biff Henderson. Henderson's Plumbing, remember that? Brent Rock. Landlord Charles Lowell lost 19 cottages. So you can just see all the chimneys there, huh? Oh, houses. By that evening, every homeless family had been provided with shelter. Selectman Robert S. Bowles commanded the bivouac. Hear, hear. Selectman Bowles. It ended just after 5 p.m., I think it's closer to 6 o'clock, at the corner of Ocean and Samoset. The winds changed. This guy, Captain Everett B. Wood, a tough guy, and the crew from the Plymouth Fire Department saved Brant Rock.
That was my house. The Ocean.
Go back. Should we go back? Which one, sir?
That's down the street. Mine, it was at
the light blue?
Ocean.
Are you the blue one?
No, we just did it over. But I brought pictures where I still got burnt marks up.
Oh, great. We'd love to see that. So the Mann family, right? Mr. and Mrs. Mann?
No,
Meehan. All right, good to have you. We'll definitely look at those. Absolutely. Chris had told me about that. Wonderful. So that's where his order was at the corner of Ocean Street and Samoset Avenue, and he said, we're going to hold our ground. And they did. Everett B. Wood. Which is your house? Right here?
That's my house.
This?
Right there.
Yeah, right here. That's Father Bill said that's where the fire stopped. So you're the last house. You got tinged. Why don't we take a look at some of those now here, and I'll pass it around.
I think the house, most of it burnt down. I think it's a smaller house now than it was originally. That's the house there, but then you can see up in the attic there's wood that's singed.
Sure, absolutely. These are wonderful. I'd love to get scans of these, sir, if I could. You just took these a few days ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
Would you mind if we passed these around?
No, of course, you can.
So the Meehan's house, which, right here, sir?
Yeah, that's it right there.
431?
Yeah. Now, I heard they put dynamite in all those houses. They were going to blow them.
Wow. My, how times have changed, huh? They used to give firefighters rum just before then, too. A little dynamite, a little rum, let's go put a fire on. All right. We're going to pass these around. Thank you, sir.
But I think my house was a much bigger house, and a lot of it burnt down.
Okay. Sure, and they took some of your lot, probably, right?
Yeah,
probably. Yeah, I bet. So Everett B. Wood and his brave fire company knocked it down at dusk. The Meehan's house, the blue house on the right, where it was halted. And we have the Meehan's here tonight. So. Perfect timing, by the way, the segue into that. Okay, Chris.
Is that old car?
The Boston Traveler, quote, and here's it. That's your old car, isn't it?
Is that old car?
Excellent. Clunkers for cash, did you? Last day.
We got a new one.
Okay. All right. What a racket. Boston Traveler, quote, and I'm going to read through this quote. It's over a couple of slides. The orange-red flames blended with the orange-red of the western sky and setting sun. For minutes, the sun held sway. Then, as it dipped below the horizon, the flames replaced its brilliance in light color, a moving painting of tragedy and beauty. And that's the error, courtesy of Google Earth. So $300 cost $1.25 million. And before we move on, Chris, so let's... That photo helped me out here. Here's the airport. Are we talking about that old photo right about there? Is that what we're looking at, where that plume of smoke came originally? And where would Gerard?
Is, oh, Gerard's, is that Gerard's over here?
Yeah.
Okay. Again, and I'm going to be 2 square miles gone. I'm going to read you off the streets. Yeah, you can't catch a break on Foster, huh? If the fire don't catch you, the storm's full. Gone with the wind and sparks. So here's what we lost. The casino, St. Anne's by the Sea, Ocean Bluff House Hotel, Bristol Bakery, Beach and Ocean Variety Store, Wright and Starrett Store, the Police and Fire Arrest Station, Beach Bluff Post Office, which was at Wright and Starrett's, Winship's Drug Store, newly stocked for the summer, the Shorehaven Hotel, the First National Store, Totten's Beauty Parlor, which was just newly renovated, and the fire station, as I mentioned, Combo 1, was spared. No deaths or major injuries. One heart attack, some smoke inhalation, many singed eyebrows, and many broken hearts. 2 square miles burned from 6th and Ocean to Samoset. Holy City, Sunrise Beach, and Marshfield Beach wiped out. In fact, people told me that the only way to get to houses after the fire, as they had it blocked off because they were worried about looters, is you had to travel along Sunrise Beach. Fieldston and Wrexham were spared. 446 houses. 96 garages, 12 stores, 2 hotels, a casino, a church, and a post office were consumed. 15% of Marshfield's total value was wiped out. $1.25 million in damage. Zoning laws would be recodified. Lot space, building materials, etc. Popping beer bottles and cans at the casino became a fusillade of missiles, hand grenades, sprouting foam 30 feet into the air with scalding liquid. Residents were warned. This is why warm beer is bad. Smoke seen from Provincetown, Boston, Cape Cod, Lynn, and Nantucket. Inbound fishing vessel, a man said that, quote, he thought it was Boston when he saw the fire. Then he thought it was Scituate. Then he knew it was Brent Rock. Then he saw it was his house. The glow in the night sky was a blood red. Gawkers and residents forced to walk a few miles to see destruction. As I mentioned, most had to travel along the beach to get up and down the fire corridor. And this is a wise tale, and you're going to laugh. A woman told me that birds don't nest there anymore, and butterflies are rare. Okay, here are the 23 responding fire departments. Here. Kingston, Duxbury, Falmouth, Bourne, Brockton, Norwell, Cohasset, Scituate, Rockland, Whitman, Abington, Plymouth, Shawnee Forest, Miles Standish State Forest, Hanover, Middleborough, State Conservation Department, Bridgewater, Weymouth, Hingham, Braintree, Randolph, Holbrook. Up to 40 miles away they responded, and all out on the fire was not called until noon the next day on the 22nd. The movement of the firestorm, in order as I understand it. Ocean Street, 6th Road, 5th Road, 4th Road, 3rd Road, 2nd Road, 1st Road, Beach Avenue, Everson Village District, South Abington Avenue, Shepherd Avenue, Seminole Street, Seconnet Street, Setucket Street, Saginaw Street, Chickatawit Street, Massasoit Street, Chalmette Street, partial, and of course, the poor man's Samoset Street, just the tip. McAdam Roads, fire hose, shoes, wires, and tires melted in the heat. The Brockton Gas Company and Commonwealth Electric, as I told you, got out ahead, turned off the gas and the electricity, which would have compounded the blaze, and collected copper wire. Now, you talk about this, as I mentioned, serendipity earlier. I don't know why, aside being a poor colonial boy of Green Harbor growing up here summers, why I looked into this fire, and lo and behold, last name's Horrigan, I saw Mary Horrigan lost her house on Ocean Street, and Nona Horrigan lost her house. Talk about coincidence. Now, does anybody know, everybody know where this is? This is the great Brent Rock Fire Market. It's sustained by the youth group of St. Anne's. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful park. I always stop by. It's a, if you park, it's right across from St. Anne's. There's
right
it, yeah, where Foster and St. Anne's come in. It's right there. Park. And just if you're gonna park, park in St. Anne's. But when you cross the road, look 10 times because I guess there's a disease going around where people don't stop. They run people over and keep driving in Massachusetts. It's a beautiful marker, and I like the little and here and Ocean Street. Again, there it is. And that's the talk for tonight. So we won't go into early Boston. I can go on for hours, because you don't want that. So why don't we turn the lights up when we can. Thank you very much. At this point, I'll take questions, comments, corrections.
What day of the week was it?
Monday.
Good question. So Tuesday was over?
Yes. By noon, they called all out for our turn.
I had Tuesday afternoon off, and we came in at night. I saw the lead melted on the sidewalks.
You saw the lead melted on the sidewalks. Excellent. And you came Tuesday.
Yeah.
I think they were only allowing, you were only allowed access because you were a resident of the area, right?
Not quite of the area.
Of the area, okay. Okay. Does anybody else have a question? Yeah, any question or comment? Does anybody have the, yes?
My question is, I saw it up there, but I can't still recall. But weren't the higher numbered streets towards the Fieldston area?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I know, 11, 9, 10, 11, yes.
7, 8, 9,
yes.
10.
So,
you showed originally, I'm still thinking about it.
I don't know the history of both the naming of those streets, if they were different names at that time. That's one that I can't answer. I'm prompted to say that the fire cut over and somehow those streets were spared, but I don't know if those were still called 11th Road, 9th Road, 10th Road, or if they were even there, or if they were not considered roads, they were just paths, long driveways with cottages built off them. So I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. But the direction of the fire on 139, the origin, was in that direction, so it could have hopped over further down?
Perhaps. Yeah, I know I'm taking a cold strike here. I just... It could have. I know that the fire was consistent with gusts of 30 to 40 miles per hour blowing from the southwest. So that fire was going in the direction of the wind that was bringing it. And it would have been a black and white decision. Either all those houses were wiped out or they weren't touched. And I know that when the fire went through, it had almost like a tornado path to it. And you've heard stories of tornadoes where your neighbor's house is gone, yours isn't touched. So maybe that's the case. They were so prompt, so direct that the fire actually passed by. I don't know.
The other village that I thought of, and I don't believe it was mentioned, is an area behind the Brant Rock Market, which I also know to be known as the Acres.
The Acres, okay.
And somebody just mentioned Livingstones or Livingstons as the
Livingstons, yes.
Well, I always knew that to be the Acres,
okay.
That whole section behind it. So there's just another village.
Well, okay, so may I ask you that Livingstons?
Well, Livingston's owned a farm on the corner of Chickatobit and Plymouth Ave. You still see that house there? It's got that turret on it, the square
mm-hmm.
turret.
Yeah, yep.
Right. Okay, before it had that turret thing, there was a huge barn behind it, and it was the Livingston farm.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sheep farm.
Huh.
And the Acres is further back behind that.
Okay. So people would have staged then, the fire would have been raging this way as the fire was moving away from Livingston Farm. That's where they could use the staging area, which would make sense. Sure, please. Does anybody else have it? Yes.
I was a little bit confused because you listed the different towns that had the active fire department.
Yes.
The closest one to Marshall was Cohasset. I didn't see anything else listed. So I was just wondering.
Duxbury?
No.
I think those are the ones.
The ones that the fires that began on that day, some of the 200 fires that I mentioned, all the fire departments that were active that day, is that what you're talking about?
Maybe that's what.
Okay. So you did see Cohasset or you didn't see?
Yeah.
I thought when you said active fire departments, I thought you meant that those were the only ones.
No, they were actually on duty. Firefighting goes back. Trust me, firefighting goes back to when the cavemen first let campfires go out of control. I mean, you had firefighting units. In fact, just an aside, in the Revolutionary War, George Washington wanted to take New York City so bad that when it burnt in 1776, and he gave the wink and the nod because the British were occupying that, and firefighters went to grab their ladders, they were cut in half, they went to grab their leather buckets, there were holes drilled at the bottom, he wanted them to burn down. So everybody had firefighting, they had volunteer firefighters. Yeah. But those were active firefighting, actually had fires in their towns, and they were deployed. So anybody else have a question, comment? Yes?
My only comment is my husband's a sprinkler fitter, so he puts in automatic fire protection, and we're always amazed that we continue to go into churches that have been burned to the ground and rebuilt, and there's no fire protection in them. And you look at St. Anne's, you can see the structure of it. It's very sad. that even today you go in there, there's nothing in there. Why? It's gotta be money. I mean, you think about the capacity that the church holds, or any church holds, and I mean, my church, the first congregational church in town, the oldest in town, and no fire protections. It's a very
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, so grandfather laws, right?
Absolutely.
There you go, grandfather laws, so see. And you know, church finding the funding, that's a major construction job. Put those in, and you put the structures and how you have to make them hidden, and they have to appeal to the aesthetics of the structure. And I'm sure you get some real room decorators there that drive you nuts in terms of putting them up. And that's the old 10% of the people take up 90% of your time rule, right?
Well, it's true that most of the houses were never rebuilt till after the war, because there was no materials, just laid there.
That's right. Right. We went into a war fitting, obviously. 8 months later, Pearl Harbor happened. I do know that of the 2 billion trees that fell in New England during the hurricane in 38, that wood was used for cottages, barracks, and towards the rebuilding of the area, you know, 7 or 8 years later.
Like my house, the stuff some of they put in it was, you know, you wouldn't put in them. They must have had nothing around.
Right, sure.
So they were grabbing anything they could to put in it.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of the wood there was wood that they saved from the fire from the house, and they rebuilt it a different way. So I think my entrance was on Ocean Street, but now it's on Samoset. So I think they built the entrance later on the Samoset Street.
That would make sense. I mean, that proves it, that they had to reuse singed timber.
Yeah, they used everything, yeah.
No, I mean, it's stuff that you just go into Walmart and pick it up, or Home Depot, and here we go. You know, it was rationing.
Yeah.
You know, we were in a world war at that time, and as you heard some of the audio recordings, Roosevelt was positioning the United States to help out England. And certainly there are menaces. I'll just tell you this, on December 8th, 9th, and 10th, 1941, there was hysteria. The air raid sirens went off in Boston on the 8th as a test. On the 9th, people actually scrambled. They were heard in New York on the 8th, 9th, and 10th, and in over San Francisco. General reported seeing Japanese planes over the Golden Gate Bridge. So, and then there was the air raid of Los Angeles, which took place in February of 1942, where some people thought it was planes, but they fired 1,500 rounds of AK-AK at this object over Los Angeles. That's another story, another lecture, another day. But so you had a lot of hysteria going on there, and people didn't know what to expect. Were the Germans coming? You know?
Where was this picture?
I want to say, and I've been told, no, that's not the case, but I always thought this to be, and I'm probably wrong, and this is my perspective, at the junction of Dyke Road and Ocean Street, as you know where the new stop sign is, where you stop and actually people are forced to be courteous? That I always thought that was looking up to the left, but Father O'Connor said that's not the case. Does anybody have a perspective of that? Do you have any perspective on where that might be?
I was going to mention that I was told that after the fire, the lots were reapportioned, and
yes,
if your lot was too small, you couldn't build on it. Someone else would get that property. I guess you got paid for your portion, I'm not sure.
Oh, a little bit of eminent domain going on. Interesting. Yes?
As a follow-up to that, what the lady in the front just mentioned, my question was, for those people who lost everything, obviously, at what point in time after the war did they start rebuilding, and for those that could not rebuild and moved on, did they then sell the land? But she answered part of the question by saying it was reapportioned, and if it was so reapportioned, who got it? And how much do we know?
I was told that Clancy was in the plans, and Lawton built 100 homes and cottages and sold them for $1,000 a piece.
Well, there's always a shark out there, and Clancy's your shark. Yeah.
Your theory about where that location is, you can put it in perspective, knowing from other pictures that the hydrants would always be on the same side of the street. So you can put it in perspective with detective work.
Yeah. Only a sprinkler guy can tell that.
Well, we wouldn't put the pipes on both sides of the street.
Would never thought of that. So some of the firefighters think that they just grow like mushrooms. Plus them once a year.
I have one 5 feet from my foundation that I was an old one, and I put it there, and a lot of people ask if it's a real one. Like 5 feet from the window.
Yes.
You showed one slide, it was the depicting New England Tower repairman.
Yes.
Aside from that, the communication must have been pretty decent for them to reach all those 40-odd other fire stations in such a short.
Well, I think that what happened because of the speed of Silas Wright recognizing, you know, OMG, no, BGF, that's text language, I won't explain what that is. He went in and he got on the phone right away. They had communications up there. And he got it out. And then later you'll see a slide where they strung the communication cable, which I imagine got them to the main communication network grid. But he had the presence of mind. While the police chief was racing up and down the street, getting people out. You know, those are the two heroes.
There probably weren't very many of those cottages or homes that even had a telephone.
Or electricity.
No. Sure.
Right.
I mean, I see the poles there, and I assume most of it.
They did have it. And I'm sure some had basic electrical services and septic tanks.
I'm sure they did.
But you're talking 1941. It's not that there was a marble aqueduct that had to be built from the Blue Hills to bring water in. I mean, it's 1941. And just as a point of reference, in 1849, there was limited train service along the South Shore, almost 100 years earlier, and limited telegraph service. So they weren't shut off from the world.
There was mail twice a day in Brent Rock in the 1905 period.
Really? Mail twice a day?
Mm-hmm.
That's better than this.
Exactly.
Still a deal. You know? It's the only thing the government got right in my book. Yes?
The hotels that were built, just because I missed the dates, I mean, the earliest hotels, and somebody told me that there were you had the ocean, you had the hotels, and then there was a street behind there that the carriages would pull up to, and the front part closer to the ocean was for promenading and being seen in their lovely dresses and that sort of thing. And I just wondered
rumor has it that Babe Ruth stayed down here and drank down here, but that's not a rumor because Babe Ruth drank in every town in Massachusetts. But somebody even told me Capone was in Marcia. Have you heard that? Yes.
There was a boardwalk from the start at Hewitt's Point all the way up to Jesse
Really?
That people could walk along.
Wow. I mean, it's always been a beach resort. Few slides. I mean, I just want to get to those major hotel slides. This is what it says in the stone. We'll go up a couple, Chris. Right there. That it's talking about. It says site of resort hotels, Pioneer Cottage. And here's where I'm missing. Here's the year. So I don't see a year before that. Pioneer Cottage, 1861. The Churchill, 1866. Brent Rock House, 1874. Ocean House, 1875, Fairview, 1877, and the Peace Haven with no date. So that tells me that the Peace Haven was still up when they made this stone, and I think the Peace Haven says 1938. Can you go down a few more, Chris?
There's a great book in the library. I'll bring it and show you all about those hotels.
Peace Haven Hotel existed as a cottage before 1905.
Great, to back one more.
In 1902.
Raised in 1940s. There we go.
Yeah. Peace Haven had a cottage number one and cottage number two. I'm living in what used to be cottage number one, and it became cottage number two when cottage number one, when the big one was built, it was renamed Peace Haven Cottage and then Peace Haven Hotel.
Interesting. Okay. So there you have the major hotels there. Does anybody else have a question, comment, or? Yes. Where was the casino? To see how I just deflected there.
Where the post office is now.
I think it was across the street from Wright and Starrett Stone.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was an actual casino?
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So they allowed
gambling, dancing there.
Yeah, gambling, dancing.
Yeah, I know they have dancing there.
And it was pre-prohibition, obviously, because they,
yeah.
But yeah, that was before it was shut down, and then before it was made Native Americans took over the gambling. Does anybody else have a comment, question? Well, I want to thank you for coming here tonight. I hope you had a great summer. And I hope to see you next summer, if we have a summer.